Blog Talk Radio.
Story is riddled with challenges and changes, like blows from a blacksmith's hammer, bent and chiseled into shape. If only forging a poet were that easy. Emotional development, relationship, experiences, environment, genetics, all take hand in molding the immature adult we are today. That was a joke. Come on, we're on the air.
So welcome to the Double Helix, where we examine the X's and Y's on a show celebrating the human experience, where your true colors are what ties the room together. So get comfortable, because what you're about to hear is poetry that we are made of.
I'm the Duke of St. Paul, Dexter Bailey.
And I'm Aphasiana. We will be featuring poems from our contest on the website allpoetry.com. We are part of a group on the website called Late Night Poets. If you are in the group, you can follow along the chat to read the poems as we do for the full experience. However, you do not need to be in the group to contribute poems, call in, or listen.
Thank you, Fill My Eyes from Late Night Poets, and thank you, Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you, Dexter, for hosting with me, and to everyone who contributed poems or calls in. Your writing is what we are here for.
All right. Today we have a contest from the Duke of St. Paul, Dex Bailey, and it's called Mind Games Part 1. For his contest, we are doing mind games you play with yourself. Now for our next show, it's going to be mind games other people play with you. So tonight will be the personal ones. Some of the prompts that he had for this were: your mind has to be stronger than your feelings. Your mind is playing tricks on you, my dear. Your mind will play tricks on you and your eyes will deceive you, but your heart will always tell you the truth. Life is a mind game. Decide what you're going to play with. Your mind. Now, we have all kinds of wonderful poetry tonight, and we have a wonderful poet on the line, Pam. How are you tonight?
Hey, I'm doing good. How are you doing?
Well, it's been a kind of a crazy week, but, you know, it's almost the weekend, so that's something.
Absolutely, absolutely, yeah. Some crazy weather around in that area, huh?
There really is. My city is okay so far, but the whole West Coast is, like, underwater. You know, we are supposed to go for a trip this weekend, and that's not happening because you can't go anywhere. The highways are washed out. And it's not just that there's water. I mean, like, the highway has fallen away. Like, there's no road anymore because there was so much water.
It's not just a teeny tiny bit of water.
No, it's like breaking bridges.
Holy moly, that is scary.
Yeah, there are whole cities evacuated. There are people, like, kayaking down the street. It's intense.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Thankfully, I'm not in the deep water zone, but the grocery stores are completely empty because everyone panicked about not having highways and not getting supplies.
Yep.
So it was just, bam, there's no food. There's the restaurants are all closed because they can't get anything. It's like it's like apocalyptic.
Well, and people do that. They can't. It doesn't surprise me. It happens all the time. And even here in Wisconsin, every first snowstorm, people panic as if they've never seen a snowstorm in northwest Wisconsin before. You know?
Right?
It's crazy. But I definitely kind of understand it in a situation like that. I want to be stocked up on supplies, too. But
yeah. Like, my husband did go to the store, and he got us some stuff. But, I mean, we got, like, how much we need for a week or two. Not, you know, people just took everything. Like, nothing was left.
Like, they think it's going to last, I can imagine, like, a year or more. Jeez.
Yeah. No, I'm pretty sure we'll have supplies from the outside before that.
Right?
I would hope. Mm-hmm. I don't know. This summer it was the fires. Now it's the floods. It feels like everything's, you know, conspiring against us. But apparently they're related. Once the fire takes out all the trees, then there's nothing to stop the rain. I guess the trees usually serve as a buffer. They absorb some of it. They stop. Yeah, so now, because there's nothing, you know, standing in the way, the water all came down the mountain, because there's a lot of mountains around here. I'm in the valley, so the valley's filling up.
Right. I feel like that would make a good extended metaphor for a poem or a thought for a contest in the way that the destruction of the trees can, you know, contributes to the mass amount of flooding.
I'm going to have to turn that into something. That's a good idea.
There you go. And if anybody can do it, you can, that's for sure. And, well, I have to say, really awesome idea that you guys have for your next couple of shows to first do tonight with the mind games that we play with ourselves. And then next time the mind games that other people play with us. You know, I think both shows are going to be very poignant. I'm sure this one will especially touch on a lot of probably mental health issues. And then I imagine the next one will touch on a lot of gaslighting and emotional abuse. So
I think so.
Yeah. And I welcome shows like that. I think they're always a good idea.
You know, they make you think and they make you feel and it raises awareness for things.
Absolutely. Well, you know, speaking of the Duke of St. Paul, where the hell is his Minnesota ass?
Well, oh, I just saw a phone number pop up. Is that him, maybe? He had a work responsibility, which sounded like a nice one, helping out some of the kids from his school.
Okay, then he's forgiven.
He's coming. He had to finish the recital first, so, you know, he had
That's
to support the music of his kids. All right, I'm going to let this person on. I'm not sure if it's him or Naomi, one of them.
I think it's Tom.
Oh, is it?
You're so right.
Hi, Tom.
See, I am so psychic.
Pam is magical.
It's just like, you know, you're on the same wavelength and bigging the same vibe.
Welcome, Tom.
Welcome. How are you all tonight?
Doing good.
Surviving.
I took my friend to get his driver's license. He now has a license and feels like he's been given his life back. It's really wonderful to have seen.
Oh, that's
awesome.
Good for him. I can't have one,
no,
so
I didn't
still floating
my
out
license
there.
For 5 years, and you really appreciate how much we don't have a way to get around in America.
Absolutely.
You know, and he was without his license for like about 10, 12 years, and he's a air conditioning and metal ductwork mechanic.
Oh, my goodness. That's going to be a tough job.
Oh, yeah,
you got to
travel around for that.
Yeah, and it was tough. I mean, he literally hitchhiked, got into slug lines, figured out ways to maneuver traffic. Sometimes it took him 3 hours to get to work. He had to be at work by 7.
Wow.
So you figure. I mean, I'm just amazed that he did what he did for the time he did.
Well, I'm glad that he managed and that it's going to be easier for him now.
Oh, yeah. He feels like I got my life back for all these years. I mean, this is the guy who grew up in Germany for the first 7 years of his life, speaks beautiful German back. And because he works with a lot of Latinos and Mexicans, he taught himself Spanish pretty passably well, too. And there are people who, because he works in his hands and stuff, just can't believe that he speaks and reads one language and speaks another. They're like, how do you do that? I didn't realize you're that smart. It's like somehow when you work with your hands, you seem to be intelligent.
No, but you know, everyone has different talents and it's amazing when you can cross that. I want to welcome Naomi to the show. Welcome.
Hello, hello.
Good to have you here.
Good to be here.
So, Pam, why don't we start off with your poem, and we'll go through all the callers first.
Ah, right. Sounds like a good plan. I think my ink got buried a little bit. There it is. Okay. All right. And... this is Moncala Stone's Interior Clause, and it goes like this. I'm lost in a game of ping pong, a wood panel mind swinging at the next switchboard of thought. There's too much to absorb into raggedy plots of grainy scenes. I ride the tides of doubt, drowning in the carousel of carrying claws, grasping promises. I'm shattered pieces of Moncala Stone's, trying to find the next step in a tilt-a-whirl process of eye-beam photography. Some days, I don't know who I am or why I place one foot in front of the other, taking raw strips of a broken soul through a meat grinder healing. I hope to find the answers to the me that needs wholeness, but my mind is a boxer that rigs the fight and pours the rabbit hole into the ring. End poem.
Great read, Pam. I love that final stanza. My mind is a boxer that rigs the fight and pours the rabbit hole into the ring. That's so cool. Like, not just put the rabbit into the ring, the rabbit hole. That takes on a whole other meaning with that. Love it. And the ping pong wood paddle mind, I feel that, the back and forth. That's such a good metaphor for it. And then the carrion clause, which I'm really glad you put in the title, because that's such a strong wording there. And eye blink photography, I really enjoy that. I remember as a kid really wishing that my glasses would serve as a camera, because there were so many times where I wanted to take a picture, or, you know, if I was being bullied or something, I wish that I could, like, videotape it and have a record. And now you can actually get glasses like that. Of course, I don't have them.
Right.
But, you know, as a child, I just thought that was going to be the coolest, when I could just, like, you know, just tap my glasses or blink.
Right, right. Unfortunately, as of right now, though, medical does not pay for eye prescription glasses that also take pictures. Maybe
no.
We can hope.
That's the only way, because I only get whatever's covered.
Exactly.
Excellent poem.
Thank you.
Of course. Tom, would you like to comment?
Sure. I really enjoy the use of the Mancala stones because of the way that the game is, one of the oldest games around, and two, it's a counting game, and it's amazing how much our minds are built around counting things and trying to organize things. You know, somebody once said, we live in a random universe with a mind that is bent upon finding some way to organize it in spite of the fact that it'll never be possible. And you do such, that's my psychology background there speaking, but you do such a great job of capturing the way that the mind is bent on trying to accomplish a deed that there truly seems to be no apparent way of accomplishing, with the ping pong wood paddle mind, but the pictures. I love the, and I'm shattered pieces of Mancala stone trying to find the next stop, next step, because it really is. You find yourself counting and recounting and going back over the stones, trying to make sure you organize yourself properly, and that. Some days I don't know who I am or why I place one foot in front of the other. Oh, that speaks to so many people in this universe. I mean, you capture these really nice, unique metaphors and then turn right around and speak something so simply, so plainly, and so poignantly. It's just beautiful. I really enjoyed this.
Thank you very much, Tom.
Naomi, what did you think?
Yeah, I thought this was an amazing piece, Pam. The way you use the metaphors with well-chosen words, and they're so original and creative all through. Like, these are amazing, amazing. There's amazing wit in here. These metaphors are just out of this world. The ping pongs and the wood paddle and everything down to the carousels and the Mancala stones, and I love the tilt-a-whirl process. I love that tilt-a-whirl. And, the meat grinder, and then, like Afiziana said, the boxer at the end and the rabbit hole. Everything is just amazing. Like Tom said, there's little stanzas in between where you just write plainly that, you know, you're just losing it. So yeah, this is amazing.
Thank you.
Excellent comments, everyone. Now, Tom, I put yours up on the board if you'll read it for us.
Oh, no, my pleasure. False expectations appearing real. Now, settled in front of the fire where we burn our best intentions, We find the passion to describe the crime we call love. Romance provides escape as it stirs fires that the mind tends to feed endless possibilities for destruction. The quality of light is revelation. By itself, we are blinded. The quality of darkness is closure. By itself, we are blinded. In concert, they provide contrast. Contrast creates form, and our mind gives it meaning constructed by reason. In logic, it's validated, and we have coherence. The mind is a construct. To describe the arena where the charade of rationality exercises its magic show and pretense of proof. Carve me into a million pieces. You shall never find my mind. The brain is no more than a warehouse, a library, a server. It creates nothing new. It pretends to be in charge by itself. No more than a dog chasing its tail. By itself, it tries to survive by avoiding yesterday's mistakes while practicing what it learned yesterday. It cannot see the future and only predicts the past. Out of the character of our being, we take the sensations that create our feelings, take the role of being present, person we are, and start to live instead of getting ready to die. Only then do we stop being petty. Only then do we begin to discover how to create this miracle. End poem.
Excellent read. Thank you, Tom. I really love the part where you're talking about the brain as a warehouse, as a library, as a server. And as someone whose brain had some pretty big issues for a while, I totally connect with this because I always felt like my mind was in this library that got all mixed up. It's like all the information is still there in those books, but somebody put them out of order or spilled the shelf, and they're all over the place. So, like, with my brain damage, the library got mixed up, but it's still the essence is still there. The server is slower, but the content is still out there in the cloud. So I love the way that you describe that metaphor because I feel like there's a big difference between my mind and my brain, and that's been hard to explain to people, and I think that you did it so well in that stanza.
Oh, thank you. I mean, I'm somebody who has had to recover from amnesia, being paralyzed on one side of the body from a motorcycle accident. My own growing up, I lived in such a high level of anxiety that it's surprising I haven't committed suicide. And all these things tend to scramble you pretty hard. So I understand it. I just always liked the idea that when I was getting back my memory, one of the things I noticed was I know who I am. I'm Tom Burson. I just don't have any memory to tell you about how Tom Burson got here. And
right? You still have your sense of self.
Mm-hmm. Right, and it's just like, you know, when you're a parent and you have your child, you know that your child, before anything else has happened, is a person with their own unique viewpoint. So the character is already there.
Well, I'm really happy with how you used your experience to shape this because I think it's a very intuitive piece. I also find it interesting there are places where you capitalize words to really emphasize them, like light and darkness and logic. So there are a few different things where even though it's the middle of a sentence, you put a capital and it really just makes you pay attention to those words, and they're key terms within the poem. So stylistically, I think that was a good choice. It really drew my eyes to those places.
Well, thank you.
Pam, what did you think?
I really liked this. I was particularly drawn to the stanza that talks speech and the quality of dark. During both times it says by itself, we are blinded. I like that idea that we need both the dark and the light, the contrast. I also really like the title of this, False Expectations Appearing Real, that oftentimes we have false expectations about the mind and about what it is and what all of its capabilities are and how much it is the what makes us. I like how you say the brain is no more than a warehouse, a library, a server, creates nothing new. It pretends to be in charge by itself, no more than the dog chasing its tail. I find those very just intriguing lines. And, I like how you mentioned about avoiding mistakes. And out of the character of our being, we take the sensations that create our feelings, take the role out of being present. I like how you say take the role out of being present. Almost to me, like it seems like it's that idea that we need to live more in the presence. We need present. We need to live more in the present. We need to not be so pulled back into the past. Really a thoughtful write all the way through, and very well done.
And you know what false expectations appearing real is an anagram.
Oh.
What's that?
It's an anagram.
Oh, okay.
Fear.
Okay.
That's what fear is. When I learned that, that was really one of the beginning steps in getting past my anxiety, was recognizing that fear is false expectations appearing real.
I like
that. Wow, that's cool.
Very cool.
Thank you for sharing that. Naomi, what were your thoughts?
Well, I found this piece very philosophical and spiritual at the same time. It has a very well constructed. Me, the line that stuck out to me was, "Carve me into a million pieces, you shall never find my mind." And that right there is so powerful. Those two sentences right there. And this is very well done, and it's deep, and it has a real sense of empowerment as you read it. You know, like you want to just embrace this and be yourself and live in the present. And so I found this an amazing, powerful piece throughout, Tom. Very, very well done, very beautifully written.
Oh, thank you very much. Let me just take a minute. I'll say this is behind the poem, you might say. But one of my realizations was that, the past is what we've already done. The future is what hasn't happened yet. We really can't live either place. But when we are totally present in the present, that's where real creation is. That's where the miracles spring forth. And in a sense, we stand shoulder to shoulder with God. And that was one of those epiphanies I had at one moment in my life that really let me start living more.
I saw that. I saw that in the poem.
Oh, well, thank you.
Yeah, I saw. That's why I said spirituality. I saw that shine through in this poem. The faith.
Very nice. Naomi, I put your poem up if you're ready to read.
Okay, did you have time? You didn't have time to download it, did you?
No, I'm sorry. No? I didn't get it till right before.
Oh, it's okay. I got it in late, so I'm going to try and read it as fiercely as I read it on the recording. I took the quote and I put it in somebody else's mouth. Okay, so this is just pissed every time I feel you say your mind is playing tricks on you, my dear. You are sending my brain raging into a curled over spasmodic contracting cramp again, just by the nonchalant way you stand there staring out the friggin' window, talking about how beautiful the lawn is coming along again, and that you're really satisfied with the fence you built, and how you have to hurry because you'll be late for work again, humming your way outside as I'm screaming into my bloody insides. I watch as you open the car door with an easy tug, and I slam the darn curtains shut. Hell, I wore my tiger stripe negligee last night. You kissed my forehead, turned over, and snored. I made you breakfast with eggs, done just like you love them. You ate it all out and then burped it all out. I know the name of each one of your coworkers, know your job inside out. And you, do you even know what I did yesterday? Do you know how I love to write and paint? I don't think so, because you never darn asked. Oh, how I crisp up into a hard iron spiked ball, just wanting to smash it straight between your serene eyes. Kick the cool mellowness right out of your smile every time you try to talk, and you always pat my hand and say, oh, don't worry so much, baby. You fret way too much about nothing. Aren't we doing just fine? No.
That was an excellent read. So much emphasis and emotion in there. I love it. I love the attitude that you had throughout this. You really built up how the person is feeling. I'm screaming into my bloody insides, because sometimes when you don't do it out loud, it's still happening on the inside, and you can feel it vibrating within you. And that's what I think about screaming on the inside. I feel that vibration that's happening, that like you're going to explode. There's this resentment here, the feeling unappreciated. You know, you wore the negligee and didn't get the attention. You cooked the eggs and they weren't appreciated. There's such a resentment of feeling invisible. You know everything about him, and what does he know about you? And then to have the part where you say, I crisp up into a hard iron spike ball, and it's not just like a thing that you want to smash. You become that ball. I love that. It's almost like the becoming the little hedgehog who like then goes into the circle and now spiky and strong. And that ending, that strength that you have there at the end where you express yourself. I thought that this had so much power in your emotional response. I really loved that. Tom, what were your thoughts?
I just thought it was a beautiful portrayal of the person who has found, I won't put this, a way of maintaining a pretense and a mask that everything is fine. And I don't really have to worry about anything or anybody because everything's under control. I have the perfect lawn. My wife's happy. She complains about something, but we know that doesn't really mean anything because I'm happy. She's happy. The world is wonderful. And they're just clueless. They're completely out of touch with everything and everybody. And the thing of it is that the way you showed this, I got how incredibly attractive that person was before you realize that they really never were in touch, never really did care about you. They were just shopping at best and being their polite, wonderful self, because their polite, wonderful self had gotten them through everything they'd ever done in their life, and nobody had ever questioned the validity of it. And when you marry it, you begin to realize just how God awful it really is. It's like being wrapped in cotton and made to feel less and less, so that you strive more and more to get some kind of reaction, to get some kind of response, to just them care beyond having everything just be perfect. And you do it so beautifully well. And the intensity of which you want to drive through the illusion that they live through. That I love the, I crisp into a hard iron spike ball, but what I like that, but what really makes it come through, you know, through so strongly is straight between your serene eyes. You know, they're so perfect that the world can't possibly harm them, and you just want to blow that up. You know, kick the cool moments right out of your smile. It's just spot on. And you probably could take them into divorce court, and they still would not get it. They would look at you like you just have lost your mind. You're obviously. And they'll accept the divorce because they really were never connected to the marriage in the first place. And it's really just about you not understanding how beautiful everything was, because they're mm-hmm. never going to be in touch. It's scary.
This is a reflection of my two last divorces. It's written from experience.
I wonder if it feels so real.
Yeah, oh yes it is. There's still resentment there, you know. And
yeah,
I discovered
really the perfect man, right? Because when they're too perfect, they're too perfect.
Oh my gracious, yeah. And I discovered, this is beside the poem there, but I discovered something really neat when I was writing this poem, because I wanted to find out, you know, the medieval wooden thing with the chain and the spiked ball in the end.
Oh yeah, I know you're talking about.
And
the name of
that, you know what it is? It's called a morning star.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, and I didn't put that in there because I said, well, maybe they wouldn't know what it is, and it sounded so beautiful, you know, so I said, no, that doesn't really fit, you know, so I'm going to put in an iron spike ball, but I found that really neat. It's called a morning star, yeah, morning star that does so much damage. Anyway.
That's a fun detail. Pam, what were your thoughts?
I really like this, and I think you could have used Morning Star and then just put something in your AN that would have worked. But I also like it with the I crisp up into a hard iron spiked ball. That's really just strong visceral imagery. I really liked how what you did with your font size, making it an increasingly bigger, as if to you know, represent the intensity of emotion building up within the person. And I like how in this the general vibe of this, right, is about that sense of two people with miscommunication, one not paying attention and one paying all the attention, one putting all the work into the relationship and one who is just completely oblivious. I think this is definitely a strong emotive write. I like how you read it very well. I like how you end with the no after, oh, don't worry so much, baby. You fret way too much about nothing. Aren't we doing just fine? And that answer of no just really says it all. There's definitely touches very well on the idea of selfishness. And I also like that stanza that says, as I'm screaming into my bloody insides, I watch as you open the car door with an easy tug, and I slam the darn curtain shut. There's really just that kind of buildup of tension and anger within those lines. So beautifully written and very well done.
Thank you, Pam.
Now I'm going to read a poem by Babbler. This is called Foundation. River has run dry, wellspring shriveled and died. Empty, the carafe of my eyes, dam erected, salty streams pressing against the inside. Pruny, puckered lips, pulled up by quick-witted quips, fixed with Loctite, grimly gripped, fastened deep into the folds, beginning to slip. Tides are rising, roiling waves twisting and writhing, parched tongue lashing and scything, a tsunami builds, raging inside me. Infrastructure crumbles, concrete walls crack and tumble, deep from the valley rumbles, cities built on tiny shoulders, not racked, humbled. End poem. Oh, I really like this, Babbler. I liked especially that the puckered lips are pulled up by quick-witted quips. You know, that little smile that even if they're pruny and they're fixed and trying to be grimly gripped and make a grimace, there's that unescapable smile when there's a quick-witted quip. I really liked that. And the idea of the roiling waves twisting and writhing, there's something about, you know, when you're upset and you have that inner turmoil, it really does feel like a storm. There's a reason why that tsunami metaphor is used, and I think a lot of people use storms. She does it very well here, because that's exactly what it feels like. I thought this was beautifully worded. Pam, what did you think?
Oh, I have to agree. This is definitely beautifully worded. I always appreciate and admire Babbler's writing. And I like how this, starts with talking about the foundation of the river has run dry, wellspring shriveled and died, empty the carafe, my eyes. To me, that just feels like somebody who's cried and cried until there's nothing left. I too like the a tsunami builds raging inside me. It is oftentimes like when we try to suppress anger, when we try to suppress what we're feeling, that tension builds up inside of us. Cities built on tiny shoulders, now racked, humbled. I really like that line, cities built on tiny shoulders, because it represents all the stuff that we build up and all the expectations that we put on ourselves. Not the expectations that other people put on us, but the ones that we think we have to meet. And I like that she ended up with the word humbled, because it really is a humbling experience to realize that you can't hold those cities up by yourself. So just a excellent write and very well done.
Great comment, Pam. And Naomi, what did you think?
Yeah, it's hard to comment after you guys. You rounded up and you said so much. I love how she takes everything like that has a foundation, like the dam and, and the infrastructures and the cities, and then nature too, like the river and the tides and the tsunamis, and how she used them as metaphors to show her crumbling emotions inside herself, crumbling, not the things that affects sometimes you think that it's the things around you that, you know, cause you to crumble, but sometimes it's just yourself and your own dealing with your own emotions and your own, you know, your own rage inside and your own causes you to just crumble into nothing, you know, and to crack and to... So, yeah, this is very, very well worded, well written, and it has an amazing flow, and each stanza stands out as itself, you know, as a powerful. They're just powerful one after another in their own, you know, in their own stanza. So, yeah, this is Babler's writing, like Pam said, is always so, so amazing. This is no exception here. And, yeah, just a powerful write all through and very well done. Yeah, Babler, bravo.
I agree. Tom, what did you think?
Well, I hear this, and the first thought that runs through my head is something that I realized years ago, which is all control is an illusion. And the opening, the river has run dry. You know, the when we're happy and easygoing and life is simple, everything's fine. But when things run astray and our sense of well-being starts to dry up, and we only way we can fight that is by becoming slightly sarcastic and cynical. We really do become at the effect of our emotions. And she captures that so nicely in the third stanza, that when she hits that final summation in the fourth, it really expresses beautifully the way in which we have to accept all of ourselves and find a way to flow with it, move gracefully with it, not so much by controlling it, but more in a sense by learning how to surf with it. You know, the waves are going to be waves. The good times come, the good times go. The anger comes, the anger goes. And if you learn how to flow with it, then you are not at the effect of it. But it is, you know, cities built on tiny shoulders, all the ways we try to make it look like we are in charge, now racked, humbled. It's a beautiful statement. Really, really nicely done.
Well said, Tom. And Tom, will you read the one by Robert Pilecki, please?
Yeah, hold on one second. Let me. I started writing something. Now I don't want to lose it. Let me just pop in another way. And then we'll go to Late Night Poets. And it's one about Robert Pilecki. And it's My Mind by Robert Pilecki. Words of promise dance in the air, squatting in the empty mind, burst into the thousand pieces, wander the streets, frozen butterfly wings, fluttering hopeless promises, untuned winds, violin strings, mourning on their dust. Thousands lie on the ground, will never land on my wrist, wrapped in a homeless blanket under the sky, full of holes from stars fallen, scattered like dreams, forgotten, left in mind's purgatory. I mourn in silence, like a cloud or a tree, praying to find the fertile loam where butterflies land on my wrist. Mind's peace is born when their wings flutter. End poem.
Great read. Thank you. Dex, rumor has it you've joined us.
Yeah, it ain't just a rumor. I'm with it now, so I'm back on.
Well, welcome to the show.
Glad I'm here.
Glad you made it.
I like to be a little fashionably late. No, I went a little longer than I expected tonight at the concert, but glad I could make it.
Me too. Did you get to hear that poem that Tom just read?
I did, and I really enjoyed it. It's a great metaphor to be able to use the butterfly wings and to be able to, you know, he intertwined up quite a bit here with as far as the imagery, and he took us from heights into depths, right? When you go through like the butterfly wings and then all the way down to the homeless blanket under the sky, it's like in the stars. He's using like a lot of contrasting things that are on the ground to the sky. And I think that that's his like bouncing mind. So very well done. Very well read by Thomas.
Thank you.
I agree. And I think that I loved the homeless blanket part. Wrapped in a homeless blanket under the sky, full of holes from stars fallen. That just creates such an image in my mind. I love that. And Naomi, what did you think?
Oh, this is an amazing amazing write. What can I say? It's so eloquent in its writing and airy and just like a butterfly. It just kind of like flutters across the page, each line, you know, flowing into the next. So amazingly well written. And yeah, I love the metaphor, like Dex said, it shows like the way the butterfly evolves through the piece. And I loved that last stanza where he finally, I think, he comes into like peacefulness there. And I mourn in silence like a cloud or a tree, praying to find the fertile loam where butterflies land on my wrist. Mind's peace is born when their wings flutter. Yeah, that's a strong stanza right there, but all through it was really amazing. So bravo, Robert. I love this piece.
Lovely comment. And Pam, what did you think?
Yeah, this is another like really beautiful and thoughtful write. I like how he mentions the butterfly wings throughout. I like how, you know, it gives that sense of somebody going through a time of mourning or a personal hell. And I like the imagery of wrapped in a homeless blanket under the sky. And that whole stand, in fact, was really great. Scattered like dreams, forgotten, left in mind, purgatory. I thought purgatory as a representation of the mind being somewhere between one place and another was really a great use of a word and a phrase. And I like the release of the butterfly. I like how this comes across as finding that sense of peace during that time of a personal hell. And, you know, just absolutely wonderful imagery and metaphors and very well done.
Well said, Pam. And finally, Tom, what did you think about it?
Well, it's interesting. He picked the fifth prompt. Life is a mind game. Decide what game you're going to play with your mind. And when you look at this, he opens that up with a whole series of images that relate to each other in some ways, and in other ways are just different places to be. And then he keeps, thousands lie on the ground, will never land on my wrist, wrapped in a homeless blanket under the sky, the sense of emptiness, the sense of loss, the sense of wanting something solid. And I love this, which really makes that last verse so much more poignant than it would be just by itself. The I mourn in silence, like a cloud or a tree, like the ephemeral or the solid, praying to find a fertile loam. You know, someplace where I can really be all that I am, who I am, and where the butterflies, the magic, the possibilities land on my wrist. Finds peace is born when their wings flutter, when we begin to feel we have a foundation and a place to come from. Then the dreams and all the games the mind plays can be used to create something. When there's no foundation, when there's no place to grow, it's everything coming at you from all directions, and you do end up with that sense of feeling like it's madness and it's all lost and you have nothing. Really, there's just a whole lot of nice little layers to this whole piece. It makes it a delight to read.
Great comment, Tom. I see Frank's on the board, so I have to say happy birthday, Frank. I don't know how to say that in Spanish. Does anyone know how to say that in Spanish?
I can say it in French.
Feliz cumpleaños.
Bon
fun. Oh, there we go.
Joyeux anniversaire.
All right, bilingual happy birthday for Frank Poetic Picasso. And Dexter, where do you want to go next?
I'll give the next one by Daniel a read quick. Here, this is by Daniel Deschino, The Sickle-Shaped Road. I'm just trying to make sense of it all, but how? Science? Question upon question upon question. Since questions have been and still there's no why. Ignorance? I can't not care. I know many do. I just can't. I don't know why I can't. That's the problem. That's what I'm trying to figure out. I don't know why. Faith, comfort, and what I don't really understand. But which of the millions of things that I don't really understand do I choose? Hope? Luck is a duality of balance. But in a game of Russian roulette, the bullet always wins. Even questions that I have answered, that have answers, always have more questions, and I keep asking, looking for the answers. I can't even stop now. But is that why I look for answers, for the questions to end? Is that why I walk for the journey to end? Is that why I live for the life to end? End poem.
Great read, Dex, and wonderful poem, mm-hmm. Daniel. I like how many questions he brings up. He's talking about having questions, and he includes a lot of questions, tons of question marks in there. And I think that's appropriate for the fact that he's talking about how he gets lost in these circles of questions. I can really relate to the how hard it is to care so much. I can't not care. And it's, you know, sometimes you see everyone else be apathetic and you're mad at them for not caring. But at the same time, you kind of are jealous, envious, that they're not overwhelmed by all these feelings the way that you are, you know, to look at the news and terrible things that are happening and not feel so devastated. It must be a nice thing to not feel so overwhelmed by everything that's going on around you. You know, I dislike the ignorance, and I want the hope, but having that feeling of it's why do I have to have all these feelings? I think he brings that up really well. I love that he asks so many questions, and I think that is a really good response to the prompt of mind games, because we do get lost within our mind with these questions. Now, Pam, what did you think of this?
I, too, really like all the questions that are in here. And I like that he calls it the sickle-shaped road, the idea that the sickle represents the Grim Reaper, but also represents the gathering of a crop. So to me, it kind of, the title reflects on the general message of, you know, are we just looking towards the end and not living in the moment? Are we too focused on the end to appreciate the journey? I like that, too, that he has all those one-word questions like science, ignorance, faith, hope. You know, what does it all mean? What is the answer? And the thing is that these are all questions that have multiple answers. And so sometimes it can become very overwhelming. And oftentimes the answers can change depending on our life experiences that have caused us to grow or to metamorph into a slightly different version of ourselves. So I just think it's a wonderful, thoughtful write all the way through and very well done.
Well said, Pam. Naomi, what were your thoughts?
Yeah, well, this made me think right away of my son. My baby, after I had three kids, I had my baby 8 years later. And he was a very troubled child. We don't know why, but he's okay now. But, I mean, he was suicidal at 8 years old. We had to send him to a special place there. And I remember when he was 5 years old and he was taking the bus and he just looked at me with his big eyes and he looked at me and he said, "Mommy, we all die, eh, one day?" And I said, "Well, yeah." And he said, "Well, why do we live then?" And then the bus came and I said, "Okay, the bus is here, you go." But that just stayed with me, you know, those big eyes and that big question for a five-year-old. And he was just like right away when from the time he was born, he was already like very sensitive and he questioned everything. And this poem made me think of him. And I love how he intertwines, Daniel here intertwines these questions and the sentences, and the questions are intertwined, you know, and they go back and forth. And that emphasizes the whole feel of this poem. And, why, you know, why this and why that and why when there's so many answers, you know, how can you find the right question to start off with if there's so many answers, you know, and there's so many questions, but there's so many answers, there's so many different answers. So which one do you choose? And in everything. So, this really touched me, this right, because it made me think of, my son. So very well written all through Danielle, and I really like this write.
Well, thank you for sharing that. I think that's fascinating by how some kids just naturally have those deep questions, even when they're so young. Dexter, what were your thoughts?
Well, I just love the way that you know, that ended. Yeah, asking those questions, because I just thought that was such a intriguing and interesting perspective to have. You know, we always have all these questions that we're trying to answer, but is it something that is wanted to have all the answers, and what happens then at that point? I always appreciate the angle that Daniel takes in his write. So very well done, and thank you for submitting.
Tom, would you like to comment?
Okay, before I preface what I wrote to him, when I was younger, it was the choice was you either live your life like you're born living and you spend the rest of your life dying until finally it's all done and then you're dead, or you're born with the opportunity to live until it finally ends and then you die. The choice is yours. But anyway, what I wrote was, when I was a counselor, I used to tell my teens that why was the ultimate BS creator, because only God knew why. And last time I listened, he wasn't telling. Now, I understand the need for answers. Answers are power and safety. Answers are a full charade because they lead nowhere. We are the answer, and the question for meaning is what we create. Does this mean there is no meaning? Only if we want to have no life. I've looked at death enough that with the time I have left, I choose to live. This is not a race. It is a choice. I'm not in a rush. My bucket list is vast, but it is not a demand, just a possibility. I no longer have to want a lot of stuff or recognition to be okay. This is my choice. And because that's the only way I know how to respond to something like this poem. It's definitely someone who's very carefully worked their head, their mind really well to try to get a handle on everything, which in my experience generally means that you don't have a handle on anything. Life like that. And I'm 71.
I don't think I've ever had a handle on everything, that's for sure.
Never will
Jack,
either.
Where do you want to go next?
I'll call my own shot, and then I'll have you read yours, and then we'll keep rolling.
Okay.
All right, this is my final answer, is I have no clue. Kind of ties into what we were just talking about. Traveled light years in my head, a Milky Way of stimulation, where every thought escapes. Yet the further and further I chase them, confusing progress with distance and theory with wisdom. Another lonely night, another motel bed, deep in my mind's seedy side of town. Kept awake by the neon sleep sign glowing red. Is this step necessary struggle or hellbound? Often debate myself, and somehow I never win. Hate when someone answers with a question, but I like to get under my own skin. Am I right that that's all wrong or argumentative? And here I am again with nothing definitive, seeking truth, but a complete revolution, like a race that starts where you finish it. Maybe I'm religious. I always pray for stupid shit.
Oh, that's you always got to end on a little bit of a fun note. I mean, like, you know, there's a mix of the dark and the humor in there. I really liked, yet the further and further I chased them, confusing progress with distance and theory with wisdom. You know, there's a big difference between progress and distance. Just because you're moving forward doesn't necessarily mean you're moving in the right direction. I think that this is really insightful because, like, your mind's seedy side of town. It's not that you're in the seedy side of town. It's that you're, you know, there's that gutter in your mind that that takes you places. I debate myself and somehow never win. And it's interesting when you're both sides, you're still losing. And that's something that says a lot. That ending, though, you like to kind of, like, poke fun at yourself a little bit there. And I enjoy that dark humor. Tom, what did you think?
Thank you. You guys chose a really great subject for tonight, because it's one that I think we all play with at the same time. We recognize it being one of the greatest traders of BS we can possibly come up with. One of the things I loved about hiking was after about 3 days of being up in the mountains with no stimulation except for just lots of trees and walking for the entire day, your brain finally runs out of things to bullshit on. And all of a sudden, you're just really present to the moment. And life suddenly shifts. And I think about that when I was listening to this, because this is so much about getting caught so deep in your head that pretty soon you don't know whether you're up, you're down, or turned around. The confusing progress with distance and theory with wisdom. Yeah, there's lots of theories, but none of them get terribly wise. And generally, my experience is that there are certain things you can't claim. You can't claim to be wise. Other people tell you that. You have to be careful around the guy who wants to be brave because he's liable to get you killed. And the guy that tells a girl, you can trust me, she knows damn well is the last person she should ever trust. They're just things you can't claim. And you catch this with this often debate myself and somehow never win. Hate when someone answers the question, but I'd like to get under my skin. Am I right that it's all wrong or argumentative? Well, no, it's a matter of choice. And that last line cracked me up because I don't think prayer makes us religious. I think it reminds us that sometimes we're little kids and we really want mom and dad to show up real quick and just fix everything. Life was so much simpler that way, you know. People can turn that into a religion if they want, but I don't think we start there. But this is very sharp, very insightful, a certain mix of cynicism, a certain level of sarcasm, and a whole lot of who knows. Well done.
That's a great comment because I didn't really know where I was going on either, so thank you, Tom.
No, you're welcome.
Pam, what did you think?
Well, as always, I really enjoy Dexter's writing. I like how you interweave serious thought with that bit of humor at the end. I like how you remind us that there's a duality to the mind, and oftentimes it's having a debate with itself. You know, and can't make a decision. And, you know, sometimes it's really feels like we are running on that hamster wheel. I too really liked that ending, and I think it's very relatable. Sometimes we find ourselves praying for stupid shit. And other times, like, I don't know about you, but if you've ever been in a car with somebody who drives like they have no fear and they never follow the CS, and then you're in the car with them, and you're clutching on to the seat, and you're in your head praying, and you're like, why am I praying now? I hardly ever pray, but, you know, if I'm going to die in this car, I guess I should die praying. That's what that made me think of. But, you know, I really like this all the way through, but I especially like where it says, kept awake by the neon sleep sign glowing red in this step necessary struggle or hellbound. There's something within that imagery that is very Bukowski-like, very raw and gritty, and brings us right smack into the reality of overthinking and not being able to sleep. So excellent write and very well done.
We have a new caller, and I suspect it is Frank. Poetic Picasso, are you with us?
Yes, can you hear me?
I hear you. Happy birthday.
Hello there. Oh, thank you very much there. I just had a glass of sangria there, so I'm still up and tipsy a bit, perhaps.
Nice. Were you able to hear Dexter's poem?
No, unfortunately I was not, but I'm trying to read it at the moment. You caught me off guard. I was in the second stanza. But
that's okay.
Everyone commented.
No, Naomi hasn't yet, so I'll pass it over to her. Naomi,
right.
What did you think?
I'll try to read
well,
it
to
and,
go...
and give you a comment afterwards.
Okay.
Well, to go back on what Pam was saying about driving, well, that's kind of me. Nobody wants to get in with me. Not because I drive fast, but it's because I'm not there. So, yeah, I drive like I am a terrible driver. Like I stop on green lights and I'll go, oh, whoops, it's green. And then I'll go through a red light and I'll say, oh, whoops, it's red. But, yeah, and to talk to Dexter, I would really get under your skin because I'm the person that's in the gray all the time. Like there's people that are black or white. So when they have a question, it's either black or white. But I'm a person that's always in the gray. So when people tend to, you know, when they ask me a question, I always tend to answer with another question, and that really gets on the nerves of some people because they want an answer, but then I want them to reflect more on what they're asking, you know, and try and figure it out by themselves. I do that a lot with students, and it gets on the nerves of the students. You know, like sometimes I say, they come and they ask me a question, and I say, well, you know, what do you think is the answer? And they look at me like, not again, because they know that's what I'm going to say, you know. And then they have to think of what the answer is, and that makes their mind, you know, go. And I tend to do that with my kids, and I tend to do that with, you know, people around me, and so I would really get under your nerves. But yeah, this is really well written, Dex, all through, and I love the how it starts out. There traveled light years in my head, and the Milky Way, and the introduction to the whole piece is just so amazingly well written. And like Pam said, that second stanza is really like gritty and raw, and the whole thing all through, I just love the way it was written, right down to that last line that made me laugh. So great right here, Dex. I just ate it up.
Thank you.
That was a fun comment. Frank, did you get a chance to look it over?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Yes, I agree with what Naomi said, in particular that second stanza there. I think this whole poem is very much indicative about, you know, the human mind. You know, it really, when you think about it, a lot of us ponder many things, you know, when we're alone in particular. We do ponder a lot of things, in particular things that are asked, or things that are on our mind, you know, and often at times we, you know, whether it's a lonely motel or it's somewhere out in the park or, you know, somewhere else, you tend to be more reflective, more contemplative, you know, and things like this, you know, and you're very perceptive as well. So when I hear this poem, actually not here, but I read this poem, a lot of these thoughts came to my mind. You know, you really did a fantastic job of conveying the human psyche in this poem here. You gave us really the whole notion of what, you know, what the mind is and how much we can tolerate and how much we don't know. You know, everyone has a perception that, you know, I've always said that intelligence is not measured about what you know. It's really measured about what you don't know. Because in the fact is that most people, you know, you can be intelligent about something, or know, actually it's not intelligence, you can know something, have more knowledge than someone on a certain thing, but that person can have more knowledge than you on another thing, and it doesn't make you, it doesn't deface or doesn't debase you at all. So this whole notion of not knowing, and this whole notion of you know, you say, seeking truth there. You know, I think the truth itself can be mired in many truths. I don't think there is one single truth that can define a single question. I think so. This is a very philosophical piece as well. So you know, you really made me think tonight. You got my Socrates hat on tonight.
Good comment, Frank. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I like that song.
And Faziana, we got you up next here. So whenever you're ready, give that a read for us.
All right. Self-deception. My mind is a trickster. It protects me with lies, numbs pain, forgets fear's foundation. Trickster my mind is, sabotaging my hope, seeing suspicion in kindness, disbelieving safety. My mind is a trickster. Pleasure braces for pain. Pain feels trustworthy. Good rings false. Danger dresses as peace. Trickster in my skull, never sharp nor dull. And poem.
Great write, Faziana. And Thomas, why don't we start with you on this one?
There's actually a whole lot in this quick little piece. My mind is a trickster, protects me with lies, numbs pain, forgets fear's foundation. Yeah, but it doesn't forget the fear, does it? And it's amazing how in having to have some kind of answer for what's coming at us or some meaning for the chaos that surrounds us, we'll invent anything we need to. And so our mind does become a trickster. I was explaining to somebody today when I was that in getting my memory back, I discovered that you forget nothing. Everything's a matter of association. You just don't always have access to it. And so the trickster my mind is sabotaging my hope, seeing suspicion and kindness, disbelieving safety. I don't know. You know, it was Eckhart who said that we live in a negative universe where we have become convinced that the negative is the only thing that's real and that the positive somehow are all illusion. And who said so? Why does it have to be that way? What is it that we have convinced ourselves that this, except that perhaps deep down inside genetically we are created to survive, so survival is about avoiding pain and avoiding hurt. And so that reality tends to make those things have a higher prominence of likelihood than we should give them. So that my mind is a trickster, pleasure braces for pain, pain feels trustworthy, good things ring false, danger dresses as peace. Yeah, we're crazy. We really are. The truth is we're not near as mad as we'd like to make out, but it's safer to pretend that we are. Perhaps we're not as tricky as we think, and we ought to just sort of slow down a little bit, quit running, and just start practicing a little bit more acceptance, a little less argument. Might find it easier. There's a lot in this little piece, and I'm not even beginning to get close to all of it that's there, but I'm delighted by what I have found. Thank you very much, Faziana.
Great comment, Thomas. Yeah, I'll kind of piggyback on what you're talking about too. There's other cultures that the demon and the devil of life is the origin is from the dynamic of life. You know, the dynamic which is uncomfortable change, but is necessary change. And for some reason, like I said, we've made it into the devil. The unnecessary change is the devil. So I think that even the devil or the trickster is kind of misunderstood as a whole in our society and as our culture. It's really our evolution, and it's all the uncomfortable changes that are necessary. But my mind is the trickster. Pleasure braces for pain. You know, we would never know what pleasure is if we didn't know what pain is. You know, we would never know danger, or we would never know peace if we didn't know danger. And so I think Faziana kind of captures this duality, and maybe by our English language and what we're accustomed to, danger and all these things, them being bad words, yet they're necessary for us to feel peace. Great right, Faziana, and very well done. Let's go with Frank. What did you think about this one?
You on mute, Frank?
The trickster's got him in a headlock.
And he's busy with that sangria. That's what it is.
I told
the
him
sangria
to drink
and comment, Frank.
Hey, Naomi, why don't you hop in? Why don't you hop in, Naomi, for the
Yeah, okay. Well, I told him it was his birthday, so to get drunk and roll on the floor, so maybe that's what he's doing. Yeah.
Oh, he does that on a normal Monday. He does that on a normal Monday, not even his birthday. No, I'm just kidding. I don't know. I don't mind to put him on. I'm joking, Frank. Anyway,
yeah,
Naomi, why don't you give us a comment on this one?
Yes. Faziana, I love how you attacked this prompt. And it's so true that our mind makes us believe what we want to believe. And it is a trickster. It is a, you know, it plays with you. And if you want, even if somebody is all through life, even if somebody is not nice, and if you want to really believe that he's a good person, well, you'll see him as a good person until, you know, he just smacks you in the face with something. It's true. Everything you said all through this poem, it's so well written. It's just like pure truth, like right straight in your face here. So just an amazing write at Faziana all the way through.
Great comment, Naomi. And Frank said it dropped me. He must have been talking about the sangria, not Blog Talk Radio. That's what I'm thinking. He said it dropped me with a right hook. No, I'm just kidding. Go ahead, Frank.
Yeah.
Leave a comment on this piece.
Yeah, no, I think I was finishing my comment there. I was just saying that it was a fantastic piece. I like the duality as well on this piece here, the way you define, you know, the good things and the bad things about the mind and how we have to endure, you know, using the mind, you know. And I like your comment there, Dexter, too, about, you know, about what you said about pain, you know. This is just a very good poem. You know, I really like the whole notion of what you offered in this poem here, and I would say the philosophy as well.
Great comment, Frank. And Pam, what did you think about it?
Oh, I thought this was absolutely just an amazing brevity, and I really like what everybody had to say. I like how you say my mind is a trickster repetitively, but in the second stanza you flip it around to trickster my mind is. Because I feel like that represents the whole idea of how the mind flip-flops back and forth, and even the smallest of details can really impact how we feel about something, and it can really relate to good rings, false, danger dresses as peace, because it's that whole idea that something just feels too right, and you're expecting any moment for the ball to drop. And the ending couplet was really just a nice way to wrap this up. Trickster my skull, never sharp nor dull. And I like how you say never sharp nor dull, because it's that whole idea that of being almost completely aware and yet not aware. It's really great about that duality of, you know, there are things that I will that the mind, the trickster mind, will constantly pick up on, and there are ideas or thoughts or feelings that it misses. So really just a thoughtful write all the way through, and very well done.
Great comment, Pam. And Frank, it looks like we got you on the board, so whenever you're ready, go ahead and give that a report.
Yes, this is for the prompt 5, life is a mind game, decide which game you're going to play with your mind. All right, it's called mind games, and it goes like this. Fantasy can never be the same as life, for it is only the guise of a yearning hope. To be a dreamer does not require nothing more than a mere imagination. The mind is a wonderful invention of thoughts, or the terrible waste of expression. What we believe to be actual reality can manifest in the possibility of nothing. Ergo, the mind is like a fresh painting. It can make you perceive many abstract things. It can contemplate between a genuine form and a shadowy figure. Ipso facto, the mind is a signature captivating our sentient awareness. It can evolve into a distinctive action or be corrupted by a false impression. If one is bold enough to play the game of truth or dare, then what determines its validity? Mind games are the peak of our fascination or the downfall of impulsive infatuation. Like a ruminative game of chess, an opponent observes studiously the other opponent. Perhaps to the ordinary thinker, mind games are just implicit adultery. And to the intellectuals, they are a powerful display of exploitation. 'Tis not the admission of that agathocatalogical contrast that is pervasive, but in the manner we fail to acknowledge that contrast. For you see, the mind is the inference from which we devise ideas. It is also the point to our self-destruction. What is the mind but notion in the intellectual sphere, the origin to our creativity, or the falsehood to our identity? What are mind games? They are simply all that is for all that is not. Like it or not, the oldest game of the mind is deceit. One can either play this game or not. End of poem.
Great read and write, Frank. And Pam, why don't we start with you on comments on this one?
Absolutely. Yeah, this is a wonderful read and write. I like how he says, like a ruminative game of chess, an opponent observes studiously the other opponent, perhaps the ordinary thinker. Mind games are just implicit adultery. I like how you express the idea that mind games are different to different people, you know. I like how you here look at the mind games as perhaps an opportunity to learn and grow. I also like what we believe to be actual reality can manifest in the possibility of nothing. Ergo, the mind is like a fresh painting. It can make you perceive many abstract things. And I think that's part of what appeals to me about abstract poetry and abstract art. Is that there's this opportunity to see so many different views that the mind can open up. For you see, the mind is the inference from which we devise ideas, yet also the point to our self-destruction. Again, another great line that shows the duality of the mind, how, you know, the mind games can be something that can help us grow, but they can also, especially the more we go into the emotional mind games, be our downfall. So really wonderful write and very well done.
Well, I appreciate that, Pam. Thank you very much.
Great comment, Pam, and good night, Naomi. Why don't we go to you, Thomas, for a comment?
Okay. one of the first things, I'm losing my voice here. One of the first things we do when my instructor said this to me is we go, what I think is real, when what we think is just that, is what we think. And that part of the exercises that he had me going through in Tai Chi, was to help me become present to what is real so that I could be centered enough so that I would be able to respond to it in a way that kept myself safe from any harm. As he would say, you sort of dance with it until this bad energy all goes away.
I agree.
And
thank you very much.
That, and I was just reminded of that in listening to Frank read this, because he captures so well the way in which our mind creates an incredible theater for us to participate in, thinking that somehow it gives us control over what's going on around us, or the, a greater understanding of what is actually going on than we actually have. And so we get these things. Mind games are just emphasis, adultery, profitable for intellectuals, they're a profitable display of exploitation. I mean, he just does a really nice list of all the ways that if you let your reality be defined by your mind, then you're participating in a game that really has no point, no purpose, other than to allow you to manage pretense and foolery.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Great comment, Thomas. Yeah, I enjoyed this, right, Frank? And, you know, it almost kind of reminded me of going down the street of being almost kind of Oppenheimer-ish. You know, he had that quote about creating the neutron bomb and the nuclear bomb, and about the people in the room. And he said, you know, now, like he quoted a, I think he quoted a, I can't remember, it was the Bible quote or what it was, but he said, now I have become death, the destroyer of the worlds. And so we talk about our mind, the contrast about, you know, we can do great good with this, but at the same time we can create, you know, our own self-destruction with our intellectual side, you know. And this was somebody that was allowing his intellectual side to cause great destruction, and it was basically destructing him as a person. But this Wright did a great job at contrasting the two. So great poem, Frank, and happy birthday.
Oh, I appreciate that. And that's why I threw in that line there, the oldest game of the mind is deceit. One can either play this game or not. That was what I was trying to emphasize in this poem here.
Well, great piece, Frank.
All right,
Thomas, Mike. If I could get you to read the next one by Stephen Wellman, I'd appreciate that.
I have to run, my friend.
Than writing it, I promise.
Yeah,
you.
Not a problem, Frank. Say, thank you for joining us.
Thanks a lot, my friends. And now, if you see anything,
take care.
Thomas as well. Take care, my friends. Thank you for wishing me a birthday. Take care.
Okay, this is Charred by Stephen T. Wellman. I was young, but I remember the fires, the raging flames, the hot ticking temper, your dismal disposition, seared, matting melancholy, memories eternally etched in an eight-year-old fickle mind. Your bruises burn bridges to any future we may have had, the hellacious fury discolored every innocent, reaping recollection. My childhood selfishly scorched, buried beneath blackened eggshells, I reluctantly walked every day. Scarred, remnants,
remain. Ghoulish ghosts haunt. Out of grim gray ash my life grew, despite having burning ears from searing strong rebuke. It did not win. I was stronger, and like the phoenix, I did rise. End poem.
Great read, Thomas. And thank you for submitting this, Stephen. You know, it takes a great strength. One thing I, you know, Stephen is, I would say, is very open about his childhood. And I just commend him on his strength for sharing with us a lot of these sad realities of what he had experienced. And the prompt that he had written to was that your mind has to be stronger than your feelings. And there's so many people that get so caught up in those feelings during that, you know, like, how could this be happening to me, things like this, that they can't carry on. But Stephen Wellman was somebody that was stronger. He had a mind to overcome. And it's just an incredible story. And, you know, it's tough to know because we're here online, but I hope that he's doing well, and this is all just therapeutic for him to be going through. But I just always appreciate his rights here on Double Helix whenever he submits it. So thank you, Stephen. Faziana, what did you think?
I agree. I love the vulnerability of this piece. He's not afraid to dig in personally, and I really love that. The second stanza was my favorite. Your bruises burned bridges. I think that is such a powerful statement. And, you know, the bruises that this person, I think the father, gave him made him realize that, like, there can't be a connection here. They ended the possibility of having that bond. And also amazing alliteration there. Without it sounding forced, bruises burned bridges just works really well. And my childhood selfishly scorched, buried beneath blackened eggshells. I mean, walking on eggshells is one thing, and to have blackened eggshells, for it to be scorched, and you have to be careful not to cut anything or disrupt anything because you'll get burned if you break a shell. Like, that, it's so intense of a metaphor that I feel like it brings that terrifying childhood to life. This is very creative in expression, and it's powerful in its feelings. I really love this piece.
Good comment, Faziana. And Pam, what did you think about it?
Well, first of all, I have to say, slightly off topic and really quick, the other night on a show, I couldn't remember the word alliteration. So I said, this poem has really great, you know, that stuff Faziana likes so much.
He does. It's the A. It's the A for Faziana alliteration. No, I'm just kidding. I don't know what it is. But, yeah, she does love
right?
it.
But, no, I have to agree with you, Dexter. I mean, I always appreciate the raw honesty, how beautiful and emotive Stephen's write is. And I think that he's just a perfect poet to contribute to any show, but especially Double Helix. And I like how this talks about burning those bridges, walking away, because you know that nothing good will come out of trying to continue a relationship with this family member, with this person. And I like how it shows the strength of the mind, you know, and the spirit stepping away and saying, I am stronger than this. I am not what you tried to make me be. I'm going to rise up. I'm going to be strong. I think this is beautifully written and very well done.
Great comment, Pam. Yeah, I think that the best forgetting of what a word was is my uncle forgot what a question mark of all things was called, and he called it. He goes, you know, the riddle symbol. But anyway, Thomas, what do you think about this one?
Well, I can relate and share. I always claim that I survived because at heart I'm a joyous child. Yeah, I suffer from a high anxiety disorder. My father was a officer in the Navy and would come back from sea duty as a god who expected everyone to respond immediately to what he had to say, or they would be diminished to the point of non-existence. I grew up that way. I'm the oldest of six. I took care of everybody, including both my parents. So as they were both dying, I had to figure out a way to get them to understand that I loved them in spite of themselves. So I can definitely relate. You have to reach a place where you not only confront all the pain and everything else like that, but you do not let it consume you. Instead, you have to become better than it is. It cannot be an excuse for your behavior. It can't be the reason for your death either. And I'm impressed that he's able to speak of this without getting too dramatic or wallowing, because it's difficult. You can tell he's confronted it and made as much peace with it as you can make to be able to speak about it with enough vibrant honesty to have people listen and respect it. And that, in and of itself, is a gift. And he's right. It's not about winning. It's just about being stronger so that when it's over, you rise like a phoenix. Very well said.
Great comment. You know, and yeah, you know, one thing that, you know, yeah, he does share a lot of poems about his childhood, but where you talk about the skill and where it falls with Stephen is it's never the same. You know, some people I've read a lot of their poetry where they're talking about the same topic or the same incidents, and it's just, you know, the same words are repeated and stuff like that. It's always creative and unique, and that's something that I really appreciate. And so you can really know how much it weighs in on his mind because he's tackled this topic for decades and every way possible. So great comment, Thomas. It's a very, very hard issue, and great right, Stephen. Where are we heading to next, Ephesiana?
We have one by Peter Solway, so I'll give this one a read. Big Mind, After Goya, by Peter Solway. Eternity's elephant, remind all rooms, Bethlehem inns for rent. Now has just been born, Allah on bullhorn, fabrics and incense online. Tomorrow's scenic fiction, to think of an answer, smile at gutted candle camera. Dispute the hereafter. Post a lot of pastoral chaff about the blighted past and stuff. Kathleen and Kevin procuring children back in Spain. And poem.
Well, Peter has done it again. What do you think about this one, Thomas?
Oh, I like how he starts off with the Eternity's elephants remind all rooms, Bethlehem inns for rent. Because that immediately reminds me of Virginia Satir and her comment about the elephant in the room and how everybody their actions are completely controlled by having to deal with the elephant that's in the room, but because no one will speak about it, they behave and act in strange ways, but no one's admitting that what's controlling their behavior is the thing that they're not willing to speak to. And then he goes, now has just been born. Out on bullhorn, fabrics and incense online. Like he's saying, hey, now is the time. And you can't live, you know, for tomorrow because it's not real. And whatever you try to pretend, whatever kind of pretense you put forward is really has no basis in reality. And, you know, and he throws, you know, the whole idea that, you know, you're living for happy ever after or for heaven when it shows up. You can't worry about that. The reality is now. And Kathleen and Kevin procuring a child back in Spain, it really throws back to Goya's birth and beginning. And that's really all that matters is what happens right now. Very sharp piece.
Great comment. Tomorrow's science fiction, eternity's elephant. You know, with all these myths and stuff, you know, it comes down to the reality is that people don't want to answer the hard questions about how, you know, how, you know, how is this and how, why do you believe this? And, you know, and
what are you going
to
do?
What kind of came to mind is almost like Sharknado or whatever, you know, tomorrow's science fiction is this smile and, you know, guttered and all of these things, you know, because when you're talking about fiction and you're talking about just, you know, it's one thing to believe in the theme, or it's one thing to believe in the message behind it. It's another totally different thing to start to believe in some of these all these old tales and these old things, because it does fall along the lines of almost a Humpty Dumpty or a Sharknado or something like that I think that he's just, I'm going along the lines for what he's going for. I think that, like I said, it's just, he comes in like a sniper from the side, you know, you don't really, he catches you off guard, but it's always, intriguing for your mind to read his right. So Faziana, what did you think?
Well, I think it's always a puzzle with Peter. You have to read it a few times. I liked the elephant in the room part at the beginning, like Thomas was commenting on. And in the third stanza, it's scenic fiction, not science fiction, which I mistook too, because science fiction is just what I expect to see. But scenic fiction, I think that's an interesting choice that I have to ponder about how that fits into things. It's one I have to think about more. I got to learn to pre-read the Peter Solway pieces because it takes a few times to get through all of his layers.
Good point, and that's a good catch on there. That does add a different element to it, but I think that it kind of does go along the same lines. I don't know if it would change it a whole lot, but definitely a good catch, and I apologize about that, Peter. Let's go to Pam. What do you think about this one?
I thought this was a really intriguing write, and I like what you all had to say. Even from the title where he mentions after Goya, you know, and Goya being the one who painted that picture of the god, I don't remember which guy, was Zeus or Saturn or somebody, eating their own son, like biting the head off of their own son. And I feel like, in general, that there's this idea in this poem of the show that people put on of having children or even adopting children for the wrong reason. Like, where it says Kathleen and Kevin procuring children in Spain, I found it interesting that he used the word procuring, almost as if they're getting an item. They're picking up you know, just another table or chair. And even where it says, like, Allah on Bullhorn Fabrics and Incense Online, it's that whole idea of posting things online, on social media, saying, look at us, look what we did, look how good of parents we are, look how good of people we are. And so I think there's this kind of dark undertone of those who have children for the wrong reason. And in the meantime, they're destroying the children. They're destroying the children's sense of identity and self. That's just what comes to my mind, and I think it's a really thought-provoking write and very well done.
Absolutely. And to me, it raises the question of if these are the people that are running heaven and they're running, there's a lot of religious figures that do that to their kids. If these are the people that are operating heaven, then why is that the place that we desire to go? But anyway, why don't you take us to the next one?
All right. We only have 4 minutes, so probably only going to get to one comment. But here we go. Addicted by Fallen Brown-Eyed Angel. My heart has a vice and has become dependent on the euphoria of connection, the electricity of touch, and the echo of soft-spoken sentiments. But the withdrawal from a high such as this is cataclysmic. Symptoms include chasing reciprocation, craving the rush of heartbeats colliding, and the ears having an ache for reassurance. So I stand up and reveal, my name is Amy, and I'm addicted to love. End poem.
Great comment, Afasiana. Would you post that poem? And
I'm sorry,
I didn't
process. There we go.
And I came across this poem, and this one really kind of reminded me of one that a prompt that people weren't writing, and that's that I have my problem is I think too much and I feel too deeply. What a dangerous combination. But Thomas, what did you think about this write?
She catches well this sense of where we get caught between, you know, we get all these sensations, and then these sensations build into feelings, and we try to give meaning to these feelings, and sometimes we try to run away from them because they're more than we can deal with. You know, the symptoms include chasing reciprocation, craving the rush of heartbeats colliding, and the ears have an ache for reassurance. And right there, she catches so nicely how the ocean, the trauma, the even great joy can be terrifying. And just to be able to say something that means something and it's solid, I love that last line. So I stand up and reveal, my name is Amy, and I'm addicted to love. That's a great confession, because
absolutely,
Absolutely,
Thomas, and like I said, it's an addiction that's hard to get over, because it's what we're all deep down really truly seeking is love, you know. And if you're trying to search for it in all the wrong race and all the wrong places, what a mind game, what a heart game, and what a feeling. So, thank you for allowing us to read this piece on the show. And Faziana, I'm going to kick it over to you about the upcoming contest that we have.
Well, we only have 60 seconds, but I will quickly say that I have a contest that says Part 2 Mind Games, so please check it out. And we have about half of tonight's to carry over, so there will be more about Mind Games with yourself from Dexter's contest. Thank you, everyone. Good night.
Good night.